You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about a free resource that we're offering, an e-booklet by Todd Adkins called Developing Your Leadership Pipeline. This booklet will help you and your church leadership team begin to formulate a leadership pipeline from concept to structure to training in your own church. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab, and you can download it there. Now, here's the podcast. Enjoy. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
And today we have the honor of asking our 5 Leadership Questions of Pastor Jack Graham of Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas. Well, they're in Plano as well as other locations. It's a multi-site church. Prestonwood has 41,000 members, so that's it's not a small church. they have a Christian school with about 1,500 students. That's pre-K to 12th grade. And we've been trying to get this podcast set up for a little while. And the last time we had to delay it was
really
because my understanding, Pastor Graham, is that the baseball team was in the state playoffs, and so you were going to support the team, and we had to delay the podcast. Is that correct?
Exactly right. Well, and
congratulations
we did win
to those boys.
We won that state championship.
That's
by
awesome.
The way.
There you go.
You just
warmed Barnabas's heart.
Oh, as a former high school baseball player, that makes me excited and jealous. I never won state championships in anything.
If I have an idol in my life that needs to be torn down, it's most likely baseball. And I'm a huge Texas Ranger fan and played college baseball as well. And so I love the game. And now that our kids here at our school are winning, we have a great program. It was fun to be with them and to be in the dog pile and to celebrate.
Well, I was not the least bit resentful when you had to delay for that reason. Supporting a baseball team and family are two things that I can't really argue with.
No
so
way.
Just a couple quick points for listeners about where you can find out a little bit more about Pastor Graham's ministry. If you go to jackgraham.org, that's the website for PowerPoint Ministries. That's where you can find sermons, where they've been broadcast on television and radio, where they've been podcasted, as well as a lot of his written material, because he's also an author. Has written several books, including the book Man of God. And then lastly, and certainly probably most important, is that Jack Graham is married to Deb. They have 3 grown children who are married and a number of grandchildren, and I'm sure he'll happily tell us more about them a little bit later in the podcast. But now, after talking a little bit of baseball, we can officially welcome you to the podcast. So thanks for joining us, Jack.
My pleasure. I enjoy this podcast. I listen myself, and I'm really pleased to be a part of this, and hopefully our conversation will encourage others, as the podcast has encouraged me through the years.
Well, thank you. And so before we jump into the questions, what we often ask guests to do is just tell a little bit about yourself, how you got to your current leadership role, a little bit about your family, something to add a little personality to the bullet points that I just listed off.
Well, I've been at Prestonwood now for 27 years, so over a quarter of a century. It's a blur in many ways, and yet it's as fresh and as new to me as ever. I'm actually a Texan, born in Arkansas, actually, and then raised in Fort Worth, Texas. So I'm in my hometown, in effect. Although those of us who were raised in Fort Worth, Dallas was the enemy. I was raised to love God and hate Dallas. So it's sort of a, we're in Plano now. We moved the church out of Dallas, at least, and
there
put it in
go.
Plano. But no, I was in West Palm Beach, Florida, before coming here in 1989. Had a great time down in Florida. I loved South Florida. It was a it was unchurched, unreached, just raw evangelism in South Florida, West Palm Beach, and the Palm Beach is very highly unchurched. And so while we were there, we saw God do some incredible things. And amazingly, when Prestonwood called, I had no interest. It was in trouble. And yet, I say I was prayed here, and we've seen some amazing things in the past 27 years. And Deb and I have been married for 46 years. We do have 3 children and great spouses to our children. We have 6 grandchildren and another one on the way. So it's a great season in our life right now, and we're excited about what God is doing today.
Well, that's fantastic, and that's 27 years. That's a long. Yeah, that's a long time.
I just want to say thank you. Seriously, with the number of people in our churches that they'll shift to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, and ultimately, you know, and not understanding that, you know, from research and everything else says you tenure and growth are directly tied with one another.
There's no question about that. And, you know, it's important, I believe, for whatever our calling is, and certainly as pastors, that you commit to the long haul. And I've seen a lot of pastors in my generation, even, they were always looking to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, and a lot of, you know, climbing, frankly, and seeming like it was a career rather than a calling. I always prayed that God would give me a long-term ministry. And, you know, I've been pastor of four churches now, first in Oklahoma in my 20-something years, small towns in Oklahoma. And then, as I mentioned, down in South Florida, which was really, you know, where I grew as a pastor and a preacher and an evangelist and a church grower, and then these 27 years here. So it's really good when God gives you the privilege of getting somewhere, staying somewhere. And now, you know, I'm performing wedding ceremonies of babies that I dedicated, and it's really fun.
Excellent. Well, this is my favorite question to ask our guest, and that is, who are you learning from?
Yeah, I would say life. I'm turning 66 this, I can't even believe I'm saying that, but I'm turning 66 this week, 2 days from now, here in June 30th. And life experiences, I mean, I learned from a lot of different people. And frankly, I'm just reading right now Samuel Rodriguez's new book, young, dynamic leader, Hispanic preacher and evangelist. And whether it's some of the young leaders, you know, some of us who are older can learn a lot from the guys who are coming behind us. And it's important that we do that, because the minute we stop learning and growing is when we stop living and we're ineffective. So I'm pretty excited about a new generation of preachers who are impacting a lot of different lives. But I would say more than anything, just life experiences. I had prostate cancer about 7 years ago. I learned a lot during that experience about mortality, about dependence upon God, about trusting God in, you know, a guy who'd never had even a cold hardly, and now I'm seeing the C word attached to my name. So the tests, the trials, and experiences of life teach us. And as it's been said, for the most part, what we learn from the people we meet and the books we read and the experiences that we share. And I would say that's true for me. Life experiences, and that's where you get wisdom for life.
Well, I want to follow up on something you said when you were talking about learning from younger leaders. It seems like a lot of our older guests are actually the ones focused most on learning from younger leaders. But before you got on the podcast, Barnabas and I were talking about a friend of ours who's been on the podcast before, Stephen Miller, who's come to your church. And, you know, the question back and forth was, what's interesting that Stephen Miller, where he, you know, was, and what someone would picture as a large legacy Southern Baptist church, you know, those don't exactly mesh up. So give me some commentary on that.
Well, Stephen Miller is an incredible young worship leader, and we were introduced, and the interest grew on both sides, and he is leading worship at our North Campus and also part of our entire team here led by Michael Neal. It's really in the worship ministry of the church that we're seeing, that we're trying to stay fresh. And it's so many churches get stuck in style, and rather than embracing the new wine and the old wineskins don't work. And so we're changing our worship style here. And Stephen is a part of that. And we've always been willing to change. but we're certainly open to young leaders. And Stephen is one of the best. I mean, he's not only a worship leader, but this guy has written, and this guy's waters run very deep.
Mm-hmm.
And he's highly committed. And, you know, he wrote a book called Worship Leaders Are Not Rock Stars. And he's one of my favorite people right now.
I just really wanted to draw that out, because so many times, you know, somebody will say, well, what was that person really like when you guys interviewed him? What were they really like? And so this is just a way, you know, when we draw out some of these things for people to see, you're not just talking about learning from young leaders. You're not just talking about new wine and old wineskins. You're actually doing it.
It's important that it's essential. Churches age just like people do. And when you're a senior leader of a church, if you don't, one of the most important things I believe an older leader can do is to stay around younger leaders. And it brings energy, it brings new ideas and freshness. And you know, my goal right now is to transition to a new generation. One of my top goals in my life is to transition to a new generation of leaders for the church.
This is more of a mindset question, following up on the transition and on being around younger leaders. We've had the privilege of talking to a number of sort of established legacy leaders who have emphasized a similar point to what you're making, but we also know of plenty of leaders who have kind of distanced themselves from younger leaders, and they're sort of the get off my lawn attitude. So how do you, I guess the question is, how do you maintain an attitude, and how do you develop the humility to really listen to younger leaders who oftentimes will probably say some stuff that's inexperienced or off the wall, but are also bringing new energy and new ideas to the table? So how do you develop and maintain that attitude and that humility to learn from them and enjoy being around them?
My leadership style, I guess you would say, is coaching. I love the idea of coaching young leaders and developing pastors. And we have a network at Prestonwood now of young leaders that are all over the country, church planters and young pastors in established churches and so on. And this gives me an incredible amount of joy to do this. I presume the way it happens is I just want to have a generous spirit. And I view what we have been given over the years and the blessings, we are blessed to be a blessing. And what I have been given, whatever I may have learned, I want to leverage that into the lives of young leaders. Nothing thrills me more than to see one of our young men in our network succeed around the country. So there's incredible joy in giving your ministry away. After all, Paul said, this is the ministry that we have received, not achieved, but a ministry that we have received from the Lord. And what we have is a trusteeship. It is a guardianship. It's a stewardship. And with that stewardship comes the responsibility, as in Paul to Timothy and so on, of passing the faith and the ministry of the gospel along to young leaders. So, again, that it's so important to me, not only for the effect that it has on young leaders, but if you're asking me, why would you do it? Why would you, you know, not protect your own turf? Why would you? Well, that's a matter of turning from self and selfishness and personal pursuit and ambition to seeing your role and responsibility as helping others succeed.
Well, yeah, thank you for that and clear, you know, giving that, because I know we have some listeners who are working hard to develop and feed into younger leaders. And so to hear that from somebody else in that mindset is very encouraging. Let's move into our second question, and you may have already begun answering this a little bit in talking about handing off some of your leadership. That may be the answer. But the question is, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either for your leadership team or for yourself personally?
The focus for us is evangelism and missions, and maintaining that focus is always the biggest effort, the biggest challenge that we have in organizations is maintaining that focus. And, you know, in a large church like ours, we have, you know, so many ministries, programming, and this thing gets created and added onto year after year. And the biggest challenge we have is always pruning, staying lean and clear with our processes, and collaborating together with a large staff, keeping people on the same page. So I would say the biggest challenge we have, I read, you know, the books like Simple Church by Tom Rainer, and I say, man, I long for Simple Church, because frankly, you know, I never set out to be the pastor of a so-called mega church. People ask me, did you dream this? Did you envision this? Was Preston Wood, you know, did you write all this down? Absolutely not. I did dream of reaching people for Christ, fulfilling the Great Commission, being the church, being committed to the church. And I heard a long time ago, you know, the words, you pay attention to the depth of your ministry and God will pay attention to the width of your ministry. And I really adopted that, and God has given us, you know, many members and new believers, but it was never, I don't think I ever prayed for a new member. I don't think I ever found myself, oh, God, give us more members. What I did pray for was people that we could reach for Christ, that we would saturate our community, our cities with the gospel, and the natural effect of that, of a healthy, vibrant church, is growth. So what the challenge then is incorporating that growth and putting systems together and an organization around it that keeps it from being unwieldy. We have to overcome our size, frankly. I mean, most people, you know, are put off by, you know, a huge church. I mean, I would never go in there. It's institutional, it's cold, there's the money and all of that. So we have to overcome all of that. And by doing that, staying focused on the gospel and loving people, and not becoming just this big mammoth church on a hill somewhere.
Let me ask a follow-up question to that. You know, you mentioned as you grow and as you add ministries, there's opportunity costs there for, you know, if people participate in one thing, they can't participate in the other, or there's a struggle for volunteers, or there's a struggle for impact, because we have a tendency in our large churches, and I come from one, to be more affinity based than evangelism based or missions based. So when you discover those ministries, how do you go about dismantling, or how do you go about editing?
Yeah, good word, editing. You know, what do you do with a dead horse? You dismount, right? And dead horses in churches, we ride them for years and years. And it's one of the hardest things to do is to dismiss these ministries that are no longer working. But what I've seen, you know, most churches that, you know, start as a mission, and the vision and the mission of the church is proclaiming the gospel and making disciples. And ultimately, over time, the mission turns into ministries, because now we've got all these people and new Christians and believers that are joining us. So then you start all these ministries, and many of them, of course, are good. But then, if you're not careful, you're no longer, you know, on the mission. You're just funding all, and then you move to maintenance. You're just maintaining all the stuff that you've created, and from there, it's pretty fast ride from there to becoming a monument to the past. So what we try to do is always evaluate everything we're doing based on the mission. And we do have a mission statement in the church, but ultimately it's the mission of Christ for the church. And we evaluate, we're measuring everything we can, as much as we can, and eliminating, or your word, editing those things which are no longer effective in fulfilling that message. And it's difficult. We had to actually close down a campus. And now that was something that was very difficult. We started a campus back in Dallas, and
there was your problem.
That's a problem.
Yeah. There. Yeah. Dallas. See, I should have listened and loved God and hated Dallas. But no, we loved Dallas, and we wanted. We were actually there, moved to Plano with our relocation a number of years ago. So we thought it was a great idea. We could go back to Dallas. An opportunity presented ourselves, And we were going, we were doing fine, but we weren't growing. And when you really look at the numbers and what was happening, we weren't fulfilling the mission of the church. But you talk about something that was dramatic and potentially damaging, and that was shutting down an entire campus, because you had 500 or 600 people that were very upset about that. And in many ways, I don't blame them. I've never done that before. I've never had to shut down an entire campus. But in the long run, why did we do it? We were pruning the ministry of the church because we felt like we were over invested there in time, effort, energies, and resources, and we would do much better to reinvest those resources in our current site and the other sites that were effective. So I'm telling you, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. But anytime you shut down a ministry, there are people or even remove a minister. I mean, removing a minister because they're ineffective is extremely hard to do, but that's part of leadership, and you have to be willing to do it.
Absolutely. Well, I like those, the four phases you mentioned. By the way, there's probably at least 100 pastors listening to this that now have their next blog post. and for them, I'll repeat that. And that was, you start out with missions.
You start out with a mission.
And then it turns into ministry. A ministry. And then you have maintenance. And finally, a monument.
Yep. And there are lots of monuments. All you have to do is drive up down streets in the South, especially, or in the world where vibrant churches once existed. They were on mission. They were fulfilling the calling. And now they're just memories. They're monuments to the past.
Good deal. All right. Well, let's talk about our next question. Question number three, what obstacles are you currently facing in leadership? Again, either at Preston Wood or personally?
It's always the challenge for when you've been doing something a long time is just maintaining your momentum and your perseverance on a personal level. I've been blessed with good health and a lot of energy, and so I'm full of life. But you always, it is, as you get a little older, the challenge is to stay young in the way that you think and vibrant in your mentality and your motivation to keep doing what you're doing. And so the biggest challenge for me on a personal level, and I think for a church, you know, churches get old just like people get old. And so we're working very hard to persevere and never ever quit, and to get up with the same kind of passion and compassion every day to get the job done. That becomes the challenge of someone in their 60s like me, but maybe even someone younger who's facing burnout or just wearing down. Keep going and keep giving your life away, and God will keep pouring His Spirit into your life to enable you to do it.
Are there practical steps you take? I mean, keep going and keep giving your life away is, that sounds like it's almost like a category or a mission. It's a thing that you pursue. What are some of the practical things you focus on day to day or week to week to kind of gauge your investment in that?
I'm never satisfied. It's a blessing and a curse, you know, because if you have this competitive edge to your life, you always have to monitor that in terms of spiritual motivation and just the winning. I guess it comes from my we talked about baseball earlier. Just I learned a lot playing ball and about, you know, baseball in particular, because you fail about, if you're a good hitter, you fail 7 times out of 10. And you hit 300, you can go to the Hall of Fame in the major leagues these days. And yet it's important to maintain that competitive edge in your life without the ego. If you can surrender your ego to the Lord and give truly God the praise for what He has accomplished in your life. So, you know, I say to younger pastors, you know, there are two big obstacle. One, entitlements, and two, entanglements. Entitlements is very, very ugly in a person's life, and especially in a minister, when we start expecting people to do things for us or the applause, the accolades, the entitlements of position, and to maintain the role of the shepherd and the pastor and the preacher of the gospel without the need for those entitlements. And then entanglements, of course, and you know, the scriptures talk about being entangled with those things which slow us down and even stop us and get us out of the race, anything that distracts us and diverts us from the primary calling in our lives. So the entanglements can be anything, obviously secret sin, character flaws that we don't address, the entanglements of relationships that are ungodly, whatever it may be. If you could put it in two categories, the ministries and ministers that I've seen fail over the years and not finish would be those entitlements, walking around with a sense of entitlement and expecting people to do things for you. For a long time, I believed that you could either use people to enhance your ministry, or you can use your ministry to enhance people. And if you're using people, that's the entitlement mentality, and then entanglements. And just to make sure that nothing slows us down and keeps us from fulfilling God's call in our lives.
Well, that certainly answers the last question I asked. That was very, very helpful and encouraging. Our next question, we take a bit of a shift from focusing on ministry in the church context, in the sort of the strategic context, and we take a look at home. And obviously, you mentioned you've been married for, did you say 41 years? Is that right?
No, 46.
46. Oh, I don't mean to shortchange you. I apologize.
Yeah.
46 years, three grown married children, six grandchildren, and one on the way. Is that what you said? Did I get those numbers right?
You did.
All right. So the question is, what does leadership in your home look like? And you can answer this a couple different ways. One is, how did it look when you were raising children? And the other is, you're obviously at a stage now where you're a grandparent, you're an empty nester. So what does it look like at your current stage?
Well, at the current stage, first of all, you never stop being a parent. And the fact that, I mean, it's different, obviously. You don't have the same authority, if you will, over the lives of your adult children that you have.
Do you wish you did?
You know, I'll take the fifth on that one. But
there you go.
No, I really don't, because the goal of parenting, of course, is to build into your children's lives the ability to do well, and to certainly as Christians to pass the faith along. And your children are your ultimate legacy. I've always felt it's important not to worry about leaving a legacy. Too many people worry about their legacy and leaving their legacy. It's more important to live your legacy. And if you do that, what you leave will take care of itself. And ultimately, what you leave is in the lives of your children and their children. It's a great role. Our children, we're blessed to have our children here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. In fact, all three of our children are involved and engaged in the ministry of the church or the media ministry, PowerPoint. One of my sons is the chief operating officer of PowerPoint. And another of my sons, our youngest son, is the director of communications here at Prestonwood. And then our daughter has been involved in the resource and bookstore ministry of the church. And all the children, their spouses are involved. The children are growing up around us. So it's very exciting. I mean, to me, I see, you know, it's our family. It's not just my ministry. It's Deb. We got married when we were college students at Hardin-Simmons University. So that's why someone so young as we are could be married 46 years. We got married when we were 20 and 19, respectively. We didn't know much about it, but it worked out, all right? And she's a great wife and a great partner in the work. But we're loving, the nest really isn't empty. We're still involved and engaged in our children's lives, and happily so. Looking back, when they were younger, when we were younger pastors, this was the opportunity to let our children know that our family, I mean, everybody says, okay, your family is first. But the way we demonstrated that was, you know, I never missed a ball game. I don't think I ever missed a ball game. If it meant missing a deacon's meeting or even a service from time to time, My kids knew I was going to be there. I actually coached their teams. I had a real life besides being the pastor of the church. One of the saddest things I ever heard was a well-known Christian leader of a generation ago, really. Daughter told me that I'm going to write a book about my father. And she said the title of the book is going to be, her name was Mabel. I'll change the name. Let's say her name was Mary. Said, Mary, this is the pastor calling. And she said, the reason I'm calling it, I'm going to name that book because when my daddy would call me, he would call himself the pastor. And she had never forgotten that. And she was embittered by that. And
I bet.
And yeah, rightfully so, because, you know, our children need to know us as daddy and not just the pastor. And I think my children would tell you, while I was far from a perfect dad, we were consistent. They didn't see somebody different at home than they saw in the pulpit. And they respected that as a result.
Well, and as a plus, you got to skip out on some deacons meetings too. So
there you go.
No complaints there, right?
No kidding. That's the one thing. Don't tell my deacons this, but at this stage, I've been to so many deacons meetings and so many meetings. I'm really ready to let somebody else go do all the meetings.
There you go.
Just let me preach and pray and evangelize
and go to lead, ball games
and go to Ranger games. And my 11-year-old son's my 11-year-old now is a great, our little grandson. He's a great little ball player. And I'm just loving life, loving the family. It's a great season of our lives as parents.
Great. Well, here's one of the things that I would say. One of the things you said earlier is you talked about living your legacy. And I think I already know where you're going to go with this question. But our fifth and final question is, what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
Yeah. Never be satisfied. But always be content. You know, looking back, you know, if there are some regrets, the regrets would be in the realm of not celebrating the victories enough. Huh. You know, I was the kind of athlete that when I, you know, you're always, everybody's always talking about the athlete they used to be. The older I get, the better I was, right? That's a t-shirt. but when I remember as a ball player, And it carried over to my life. I hated losing more than I loved winning. And in some ways, that's a good competitive edge when you're an athlete. But when in life, and certainly in ministry, I regret not celebrating and slowing down long enough to enjoy the victory. Now, I don't mean to say I haven't enjoyed the ministry, because I have, and I've enjoyed my life. I have no regrets in that sense. But I would say to a young pastor, a young Jack Graham just starting out, you know, don't be so serious. Don't be so so competitive to the degree that you cannot enjoy what God does. I wish I'd have kept better notes of, you know, I'm not a very introspective kind of leader. I'm not the kind of person that's always looking within and trying to figure out what I did or why I did what I did, which I would, you know, but I wish I had been more reflective, if you will, along the way to experience fully. And now, you know, 46, I was ordained the same year we were married. So 46 years into ministry, in many ways, it's so fast. You know, Billy Graham was asked, you know, what's the biggest surprise of your life? And he said, the brevity of it. And the brevity of ministry and how fast truly your children grow up. You know, I know everybody, all you young parents, everybody's saying, you know, watch your kids, you know, because they grow up so fast. And you say, yeah, especially when you're in the middle of trying to get it done. But they really do grow up really fast, and your life passes very fast. So enjoy every season, every day, every decade. Never be satisfied, but always be content.
That's a good word.
That is a strong place to wrap this podcast up. Jack, thanks so much for joining us here and sharing some of your experience, your wisdom, talking baseball a little bit. I'm always hungry for that because Todd's relatively useless when it comes to talking baseball. Great True with leadership, story. Not so good with baseball.
Absolutely. Well, you guys come over and I'll take you to a Ranger game.
There you go. It's a deal.
Yes, that sounds fantastic.
I mean that.
Especially if we can go in like April, not July or August.
To experience Texas baseball, you got to come when it's a blast furnace. It's 108 in August.
Well, all right. If we can work that out, we'll definitely do it. That sounds fantastic. And for you listeners, quick reminder where you can find more from Pastor Graham. If you go to jackgraham.org, that's the website for PowerPoint Ministries. You can find his sermons there in video and audio format. You can subscribe to a podcast. You can also find his books. You can find transcripts of the sermons. There's also a place you can go there if you need prayer or would like somebody to pray for you. They have a link there where you can do some of that as well. So jackgraham.org, be sure to check that out. Please jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review if you haven't already. A bunch of you have, and we appreciate it. That helps us be put in front of other leaders who may benefit from the podcast. So if you'd be kind enough to do that, we would really appreciate it.
If you just tell like five people about the podcast, you can be exempt from
leading. That's true. Yeah. If you tweet about us using the hashtag 5LQ, that's also an exemption from the review, although we still appreciate it. So thanks so much for listening. Tune in next time. We appreciate you as listeners.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Before you go, we wanted to remind you about the free e-booklet, Developing Your Leadership Pipeline, that will help your church get started training leaders more effectively. To download, go to lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab at the top. Again, that's lifeway.com/churchleaders and select the free e-booklet tab where you can download the e-booklet for free.